work session of a public hearing portion of our meeting today, and we'll reorder our agenda to hear in a public hearing House Bill 2704, having come to us from the House Committee on Human Resources. I'd like to invite Representative Crummell to come forward.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, say that I'll vote for anything Representative Crummell thinks is a good idea.
Okay.
Wow.
Boy.
Well, he voted for
a deal for you.
As long as you have a prison site, sir.
He voted against something like gun bill, but he didn't. He didn't join. That's what the fun.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for allowing me to come and speak very briefly about this bill. I just want to give you kind of a quick summary of and review of where we've been over the last 22 years. This is a project that I've worked on since then. I'm a certified athletic trainer, registered athletic trainer, registered by the state of Oregon. Currently, in 1993, Registration Act was passed by the legislature and signed by the governor, and it was a voluntary registration. And we had a minor little glitch because there wasn't an appropriation put into that bill, so we were able to get that fixed in the 95 session, where we added into revised statutes a fee that registrants would pay. But it still has always been a voluntary registration for athletic trainers in the state. This year, we decided to go ahead. We, the Oregon Athletic Trainers Society, decided that they wanted to go ahead with mandatory registration. And there's one primary reason why they want to move forward with a mandatory registration, and that is when you talk about an athletic trainer, many times what happens is that you have an expectation level at a certain level. You expect that the athletic trainer, if you have somebody injured on the field, is going to be able to go out, take care of the injury, render first aid, and appropriately care for it. And that includes in a collision type of sport such as football, that type of injury where you would expect to potentially have a neck injury or a back injury that could, if it's not taken care of properly, can be devastating to the person that's been injured. And then there's the rehabilitation aspects of what athletic trainers do, and kind of the care in between. At the college level, there were many times that I found myself also sort of being the soothsayer and the friend and the everything in between. But there's a certain level of expertise that you expect to have when you say the word athletic trainer. We still have in our state folks that are practicing that are not at that competency level, and that concerns me, and that concerns the athletic trainers as well. So what the athletic trainers have tried to do is put into a bill 2704 a scope of practice that is, it covers five of the six domains that are within the scope of practice of athletic trainers on a national level. The only domain that's missing is athletic administration. Otherwise, when you look on page one there in the second section is where the scope of practice is located. So then there's some flexibility. As you look throughout the bill, what you'll find is that there's some flexibility for the board in terms of being able to set standards from the standpoint of what type of exam that they should look at or have, who's going to be able to pass that exam, what a passing score on the exam is going to be, and several other aspects. What this will do, and the purpose of it, is to bring that level of competency up so that when you have an expectation level, when you say athletic trainer, the competency level is going to match with the expectation. Because not only is it a practice act, but it also is a title act. So if someone is going to call themselves an athletic trainer, then they have to be registered under the under the Act. Now, one of the motivations as far as why the athletic trainers want to have this this bill passed. They would like the board to have flexibility, and I mentioned that as well, and that's already in there. There's currently in the state about 316 athletic trainers. Approximately 210 of them are either certified by the national body and registered by the state. And actually, at this point, I think only 65 are actually registered by the state under the voluntary registration program. And Sue Wilson can probably help that by having the mandatory registration. What it will do is it will bring those numbers up. So of the 210 athletic trainers that are practicing, they will need to be registered. And I'm anticipating I actually figure that we have approximately 216, I believe, athletic trainers that are certified by the national body. But not all of them are working, so they may not register, and that's why I've lowered the numbers a little bit to about 200 is what the fiscal impact statement is based on. With that, I think. One question that has come up in conversations that I've had, and that's third party reimbursement. So I'm going to just put that right out on the table. Third party reimbursement could end up being a consequence of this legislation, but it's not the motivator. I think that the market is going to determine whether or not third-party reimbursement plays a role. There are approximately 50% of the athletic trainers statewide and nationwide that work in a private clinic type of setting. Third-party reimbursement would certainly be helpful, but that is not the motivator for the legislation. I think that the insurance companies, you'll notice that in the bill there is not a mandatory required payment by insurance carriers or anybody else. It's a matter of we've decided that would be, I decided basically, that I want to let the market make those determinations. So with that, I will stop. I'll be glad to answer any questions, and certainly feel free to ask Sue Wilson. One of the things, one last thing, I'm sorry, and that I just wanted to make mention of, and that is the fact that we have sanctioned this to be under the Health Licensing Office. That's currently where the Athletic Trainer Registration Program is at. They have done an excellent job of administering the program in the past, and in an effort to try to drive the cost down, we did not want to have an autonomous board. But what we have done is we've set this legislation up so that there is a board that does set policy as far as athletic trainers are concerned, but they fall under the Health Licensing Office. So all of the administrative functions will be taken care of by the Health Licensing Office. And I will answer any questions, and I do appreciate your support on House Bill 2704.
Thank you, Representative Cromwell. Colleagues, are there questions? Senator Phil is recognized.
It's a very interesting operation. Got some questions related to it. I noticed that you're mandating registration, but as I look at the bill, I don't see any language that really specifically does that. There's a definition on the front page. It says registered lab means a person who is registered in accordance with Section 8 of the Act. And I look at Section 8, and I don't see anything in Section 8 that says you have to be registered. Maybe I'm wrong, and that's just something that can be corrected if I am. And maybe it's there and I'm not seeing it.
Section 8, let's see. Section 8 is what lays out the requirements for the the requirements. But if you look at Section 6, then that should be it says in Section 1 there that unless a person is registered, they can't practice.
I'm sorry, I missed that. I was trying to let it hurriedly. A couple just concerns. Are you going to grandfather in without giving exams of the currently people who want to be registered? And then the new requirements will apply just to the new registrants?
Correct. I think, let me see if Section 15 doesn't answer that question for you. What it talks about is that in Subsection 1 there, it says that any person that's actively engaged as an athletic trainer on the effective date is considered licensed under the 1999 Act if they submit an application registration fees, and upon evaluation of such qualifications, is found to have a level of competence equal to one possessing the educational qualifications set forth in Section 8. The board has to accept applicants' documentation of certification by the National Athletic Trainers Association. Board of Certification is proof that the applicant has met the required level of competence. So that is, and then it goes on to say that there, I believe that there's a 180-day limitation on that. So that would be the only grandfathering that would occur is if a person is certified by the national body and can show that documentation.
Okay. As I look at the numbers you've given me for the number of people who you're anticipating to be registered, doesn't look like a huge number. And so I'm wondering about the level of the fees that they would have to pay to keep a commission going, especially if you have all of the superstructure that most commissions have. You have investigators, you have how you pay transportation, a lot of things like that. Do you have any idea what the fees would be and whether those are acceptable to your members?
Yes, we have talked quite a bit about the fees. Let me back up to the first part of your question, Senator Stroh, and that is with regard to the investigatory activities. By putting the Board of Athletic Trainers in the health licensing office, all of the administrative functions, including the investigative functions, can occur from that office. So in essence, if they already have the staff, so if they need to do an investigation, they already have the staff in place. So that superstructure is already there. The way that
the health division itself, the health division will do your investigating for you?
The health licensing office of the health division would do this, yes.
They do those things now?
Yes, they do. The health licensing office within the health division currently houses barbers and hairdressers, massage. Actually, I should probably let Sue Wilson come up and answer those questions for you because she knows it a lot better than I do. But
yes,
I think there's 8 or 9.
17 total boards that are the health-related licensing boards.
But
in that office, all only about 8 in that office.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry.
The other thing that I didn't see, and I didn't read the bill, I read it very quickly, I didn't see whether or not you were going to penalize people who were operating without a license. Are you going to penalize those folks?
Actually, yes, we did have that put in. Now, if I can remember which section it is.
Clearly, there are some folks.
Section 13. That's talking about just when
it's
registered. Right. When it's caused. What about somebody who's not registered?
That's what I'm trying to see, if whether we got after non-registered. Because it seems like the language limited itself to the registrant.
That's a good guess.
I remember because we had seen that in some other bills and we wanted to put that in there that in disciplining a registrant for any cause authorized Section 13 sub 1 I believe.
Probably would provide somewhere that no person would do this unless they were registered, wouldn't it?
That's certainly the hope that they wouldn't. But if you look at subsection 7 of section 13, it says that in addition to all of the remedies, when it appears to the health licensing office that a person has engaged in or is engaging in any act, practice, or transaction which violates provisions of sections 1 to 15 of this 1999 Act, the Health Licensing Office may direct the Attorney General or the District Attorney of the county in which the act, practice, or transaction occurs to apply to the court for an injunction restraining the person from violating provisions of sections 1 to 15 of this 1999 Act.
So that might
go. So someone who is, if they're out there and they're calling themselves an athletic trainer, and they're doing the same types of activities that an athletic trainer would be doing, and they're not registered, that would be the remedy.
I would think if the bill moves along, we might check that out, check that article. Okay. That's a little
thing.
Thank you, sir.
I'm working off the different. They both say May 3rd, but I understand it's just a different gross one. I just had some questions. How many are presently licensed and registered to be registered athletic trainers in the state at present, either through the national or through the informal state organization or Ken Crummel?
There are currently certified by the NATA, National Athletic Trainers Association Board of Certification in the state of Oregon. I believe there's 220 that are certified.
National
certification. And of those 225, approximately 65 of those are currently listed under the voluntary regular state registration program.
And they pay dues or some sort?
Yes.
How much are the dues at certain?
You mean for the state registration?
Yes, for the state.
$50.
So there's 65, they're paying $50 a year?
Yep.
Okay. That's some sort of an informal organization, isn't it?
Well, there's actually the Oregon Athletic Trainers Society is a formal organization, I mean, in that they form themselves, levels of certification and associate, you know, different levels of membership are the same as they would be for the National Athletic Trainers Association. With regards to the state registration, it is administered and run voluntary registration is run by the Health Licensing Office, which Lee Wilson directs, and we had put in the fee at that time in 1995 when the fee was actually set in the legislation. It was set at $50, and that was felt at that time for maintaining basically a registration list that was sufficient.
Taking a look at the fiscal reports, you anticipate that there might be a total of 225 then that would register on an annual basis. Then
I think that there's a reasonable chance that yes, between 200 and 225 people will register.
The anticipated fee would go from $50 to $325. Is that
Sue and I were just discussing in the back before you started the hearing, Mr. Chair, and that is I thought that it was going to be right around $275 per person, and the things that that was with if you had 200 registrants. Where there may be some the ability to reduce some of the costs, as Sue and I were just talking about, and I thought I should let her talk about this more, is that when we're looking at the investigatory types of activities, I think there's approximately, in the sheet that I saw from her, there was about $15,000, I think, in that. And I would really rather defer to her in that respect. The things that we know can't be changed are the DAS charges, and so for the rent that's paid to DAS for their space and.
Why don't we invite Sue Wilson to come forward, if you would, please, Sue, and Sue is involved with the health-related licensing boards. I think Senator Lem sits on the subcommittee that hears the health licensing board, so
Is Representative Leonard aware of the acronym rule?
I'm on the wrong side of the table.
Maybe you can confuse us, you know.
What's the acronym that I use, Mr. Chair?
That's the piggy bank symbol there. Whenever you use an acronym here, it's 25 cents. So we have great fun. It actually goes to a good cause. It's the American Cancer Society representative.
So what acronym did I use?
DAS, and you use quite some oil. I'm the acronym cop here. It even has taken checks before, hasn't it? Mostly from the Secretary of State.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. The Department of Administrative Services.
I'm sorry, I couldn't pass it up.
It's okay. You just, you know, we don't look at it.
Sue, welcome. We've got some issues that we're going to have to work through and sort through relative to the fiscal. I guess there's one other question I want to ask of Representative Crummell before we get very much further. Are high school coaches and so forth involved in this? Is that what this is?
High school athletic trainers would need to be registered, but people that volunteer at their high schools and with their kids' little league teams and that sort of thing would be exempt. And I believe, and again, I'm not sure exactly where the exemption is.
Well, it requires 4 years of university training.
Right, but if you go to,
here it is. It's section 6. It's page 4, starting on line 6.
Right.
A couple of things there. As Representative Krupp had mentioned, nothing in subsections 1 to 13 shall be construed to require registration of elementary, secondary school teachers, coaches, or volunteers who do not hold themselves out to the public to be athletic trainers. That's the exemption that I think you were asking about. But the other thing is that if you go to section 8, which is just a little further down on the page, line 16, it says receives a bachelor's degree from an accredited 4-year college or university and has met the minimum athletic training curriculum requirements established by the Board of Athletic Trainers and adopted by rule. So you have some flexibility in there by rule, but again, it pretty much lays out what they, by going back to section 1, subsection 4, it pretty well lays out what the silver practice is, what the areas are.
So basically, your regular athletic coach would not be a registered athletic trainer then.
Correct.
And there's about 220 of these folks in existence in the state that hold themselves out presently as athletic trainers?
Yes. That would be correct.
Okay. And they would normally, what do? They have some kind of a health business, a health-related business. Is that?
Sure. That's one of the things I didn't really talk about too much with regards to what athletic trainers do. It depends on where they're practicing. If they're practicing at a high school or a college-type setting, basically, the athletic trainer is the person that takes care of the medical needs of the athletic teams. So when you see somebody get hurt, if you're ever watching football on TV and you see somebody get hurt and you see somebody that goes out onto the field and starts messing around doing stuff with them, that's the athletic trainer.
I see.
And athletic training involves everything from first aid through assessments through rehabilitation to final resolution of whatever the injury is. Now, there's some areas that athletic trainers will not get involved. For example, if you remember 2 years ago, the Detroit Lions had a young man that was injured. It was a very severe head injury, neck injury, and actually he had quit breathing on the field.
It was a national football game, and basically, the girl in terms of equipment was a died on the field, but the athletic trainer, they brought him back, handled that situation correctly. Now, in the long-term rehabilitation for him, because he had such extensive neurological damage, the athletic trainer is not prepared to take care of those types of injuries. And that person, for example, would be turned over to a physical therapist to for that long-term ongoing type of that type of therapy.
So it's really a professional organization that handles the specific and specialized areas.
Very much so. In my own case, I'm a private practice athletic trainer. What that means is that I was working in a clinic with four family practice physicians, and I take care of physical medicine for them, but the people that I take care of are physically active people that are, they could be classified as athletes because they're runners, golfers, tennis players, basketball players. It's just that they're an older population as opposed to being in the school age group. They're like me and you.
Okay. All right. Okay, other questions or comments?
I wondered, could we get the information on how much that the athletic trainers they are making a year? The reason why I'm asking is that if I'm an athletic trainer, if someone asking me to pay application fee $100 and plus $325 and plus some other fees, it is almost $400. To me, why do I have to that much money? Or are they able to pay that much money?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lem, I think what you will find is that on the spectrum of income for athletic trainers, you'll find everything from very low, $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 a year, up to $70,000, $80,000, $100,000 a year. Depends on where you're at in the game, if you will. And that is, the person that might be making $10,000 or $12,000 a year might be a person that's working at a high school, is takes care of the athletic teams and is paid a stipend based on each sports season. And maybe the stipend is $3,000 or $4,000 per sports season. So they, and then maybe they've got a teaching job that goes along with it, or they've got another type of job outside of the school that goes along with it. And then move up to the athletic trainer for the Trailblazers, for example. I don't know what he makes, but he's probably making in the $70,000 to $80,000 range.
Yeah,
they go in the playoffs.
Very few people will be making that much high end. I think most of the people will be making the low end. And then there's no provision, so someone might be doing it at part time whenever it's needed. Then to me, that the fee is very expensive.
I think, Mr. Chair, Senator Lim, I think what you'll find is that if we were to look at averages, the average athletic trainer is probably making somewhere between $25,000 and $32,000 to $33,000 a year on an annualized basis.
Okay. Representative Hansen?
A couple questions. Of the 225 trainers, how many would you estimate are working in school environments?
Boy, that's a tough one. Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I think probably around 110, probably about 50% of them are working in school type of environment. You're talking specifically about high school type of environment?
High school, middle school.
Probably 95 to 100 of them.
So they'd have to pick that fee up to the school?
It would be, Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, it would be very dependent on what the school were to decide if they wanted to pay the fee for the employee or if it's up to the employee to pay their own licensing fees. I think when I was at Lewis and Clark College, for example, the college did pay my my fees on the to the national organization. When I went to work at Western Oregon University, they said, "Sorry, pal, you're on your own." So it was just a matter of, you know, what school.
It'd be my assumption that the larger districts that actually have the professional trainers would probably be picking up that contribution. If they're in a unionized situation, if those are covered by, if they're teachers that are working as extended responsibility and stuff, I would imagine that would. So there is the impact that I think it is going to end up costing school districts. The other question is probably more generic. I can understand a real need and a desire to have the registration occur. And I can see that everybody in that first year as the board is getting people registered and conducting exams and stuff are going to be busy, and I can see a real value to the trainers to pay the first $325 to get the registration process started. Could you explain what value they're going to get during the second year for the $325 license? And what are the types of activities if the bulk of the people are registered the first, during the initial year, and then they're just going through a renewal process, what will the staff be doing during that as the ongoing part of the program, other than checking renewals? And what's the benefits that the trainers are going to get for that $325 license?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, thank you. That's a very good question. For part of the answer, I'm going to defer to Sue, because the part that I'll say is that's one of the reasons why we wanted to not have an autonomous board. For example, like what you found with radiology, where radiologic technologists, where they have their own board, they have their own staff, they have, you know, all of that stuff is all kind of self-contained. And what we preferred to do was to go into the current model as we are in and ask to be involved with the health licensing office. They have a professional administrator. They have people that answer the phones whenever they're open. They have people to type up the lists and, you know, to do all of the types of things that are required, without the cost being so high because of it being a shared type of an office. It's just like in my professional office, I'm in with five other providers, and I do that because it helps drive my costs, because we can share staff, share computers and phones and space, and I mean, it drives my costs down. And that's the same idea that we have because I'm afraid that if we were to look at what the cost would be for an autonomous board, it would probably be somewhere around $400 to $500 or $600 a year, as opposed to the $325. And I think as far as what the actual workload is, I would like to defer that to Sue Wilson so that she can.
I would like to follow up there on a comment that Representative Hansen had, and that is, If it's typical for the school board to pick up the teaching certificate, would it be typical also for them then to pick up the certificate of registered athletic trainer? Do you think, Senator Troll?
I really don't know. I think it would vary from school to school and be up to the board and how they would do it, unless we required them to do it in some way.
The question that's been asked is relative to some of the fiscal, and I'd like to first of all ask about the potential of the FTEs. I know in working with the health related licensing boards, we went through and each one of the health related licensing boards had a lot of money set aside for attorney general fees and investigations and those kinds of things. But we handle awards all the way up from 500 to 1,000 applicants all the way up to 40,000 applicants. So can you maybe shed some light on that for us, please?
Certainly. Chairman Butler, members of the committee, my name is Susan Wilson, and I'm the administrator for the Health Licensing Office, which is a consolidated office of 9 boards and programs that share 25 staff. I'd like to explain just for the record what the registration program is today under the law. It is merely a registration program in which applicants voluntarily submit attestation that they're certified, and we then provide mailing to anyone that asks us for that registered list. So it's about $6,000 worth of revenue to take the postage and pay for contacting schools. There's no regulatory body set up right now. What this bill does is it creates a regulatory body that will set practice standards, that will examine, that will set criteria for continuing education, and will set criteria for enforcement activities. The Health Licensing Office uses a formula under which we calculate board activities. And as you know, because this is another fund agency, there's no statutory authority to allow costs that are unique to each program that are covered in statute to be covered by other boards. So each board must pay for their statutory coverage and regulatory authority. This bill creates a rather large regulatory oversight authority. They are gaining some benefits by being within our office, one administrator, one enforcement staff. However, there are some, and I've done a cost analysis for your legislative fiscal staff. We've calculated 4 board meetings per year, and just to get the board up and running. We've determined what it would cost for DAS, for Department of Administrative Services.
Thanks, Dave.
Cost. And we've also calculated for any enforcement or computer costs in order to get the program up and running. I believe we've given a pretty conservative estimate based on the numbers that Representative Crummell has provided us at this point. We have no way of knowing if there will be more than 200 applicants. If there are 200 applicants, $325 in the first 2 years will be necessary. As you know, legislative fiscal requires a 3-month Department of Administrative Services, requires a 3-month carry-forward revenue surplus for any unforeseen enforcement activity, which would cover the Attorney General costs that Chairman Butler mentioned. So just to get a board up and running does cost money, and I realize this is an expensive proposition. So we've left it up to Representative Crummell and the associations to determine if that fee is okay at this point. And they believe they want the regulations. So if I can answer any questions as they relate directly to the budget or how that folds into Senate Bill 290 earlier this morning, I'd be happy to do so.
But isn't the purpose of the bill to prevent people from representing themselves to be athletic trainers that are not athletic trainers and therefore could cause some harm to a patient? I mean, that's the real point of why we're doing this.
Chair Butler, Representative Leonard, absolutely. Public protection is the first and foremost operational word within our office. We are providing public protection first. The associations provide the practice.
If I can follow that up. So that today, for an example, if I picked up the phone book and looked in the yellow pages for athletic trainer, this could actually be a person that wasn't trained to be an athletic trainer but just identifies himself to be such.
Today,
if I did that today, but if this bill became law, I, as a consumer, could be assured that if I looked in the yellow pages and there was a person identifying themselves as an athletic trainer, that that person would be certified to these minimum standards.
Do you want to take
that? Sure, Butler, Representative Leonard, that would be correct. There would be a standard in place, and a standard under which we could take enforcement action against that individual had they not registered.
Right. So I see this kind of as a consumer protection bill that, I mean, most people, I think, might be surprised to know that now we don't have that standard and it establishes those things. Although it might be expensive, I think it's important for consumers to know the people they're going to are
certified.
Senator Troy is recognized.
Just curious, do we know how many of these people who are out there have bachelor's degrees already?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Shore, thank you for asking that question. Currently, any person that is registered by the state or is a certified athletic trainer has a minimum of a bachelor's degree. Approximately 63% of the athletic trainers in the nation on a nationwide basis hold a master's degree, and there's approximately 8% that hold doctorate degrees.
So you don't think that some of your practicing athletic directors will be disqualified for not having a bachelor's degree?
I don't believe so. If I may follow up on that, Mr. Chair, the only ones that would be disqualified is the guy that, 15 years ago, the school district said, "Hey, we need somebody that can tape ankles and put on ice bags, and call them the athletic trainer, and that's the fund that they pay them out of." And there was, a guy that retired from the Navy and never went to college, but he just wants to help out. That would be the person that would be excluded from this. Yes.
But he wouldn't be able to pull himself out as an athletic trainer.
No, he wouldn't, because he wouldn't meet those minimum standards that are laid out.
He would pay for it, paid for the work that he does at that point.
He could still be paid for the work that he does, it's just that he couldn't call himself an athletic trainer.
He'd do everything an athletic trainer does, but he couldn't call himself one.
Well, not exactly, because if we go back to the section that lays out, is that section 10 or section the one that's listed. Section, if we go back to section 13, subsection 7, which is on page 7, line 14, that remedy, if they're doing anything that is, so if they're, if it's a matter that the taping a few ankles or putting on ice bags, that's not going to be the question as long as they're not calling themselves an athletic trainer. What's going to be the issue is if they are providing first aid and they haven't been trained, if they are providing rehabilitation services and they haven't been trained, or if they are trying to evaluate the injuries, if they're doing the things that are basically lined out in Section 1, Subsection 4, A through E, that's what's going to then create a problem where the health licensing office would send an investigator.
So if we've got somebody that's got the wind knocked out of them, and it's a high school coach who is not a registered trainer, and he's doing the kinds of things that normally do to help somebody who's got the wind knocked out of him, that, are they engaged in the practice or a transaction that violates the provisions?
Probably not. And the reason why I say that is because it's very, for a coach, football coach, basketball coach, whatever, for a coach to render minimal levels of first aid when there's an injury is not unreasonable.
Okay. All right. Now, in this process, Katie has received some of the information, but indicates that it has been changed somewhat from the time she received it. There would need to be provisions not only for the Attorney General and rent and the office overhead, but also the 3 months required operating fund for the Department of Administrative Services. Plus, do we have a feel as to what I know that you've done some budgeting work, and I don't know which of the budgets we should be looking at overall. Is the 175.8 or the 172.802, which of those, and the 172.802 is before the 3 month reserve.
Right, that's the match.
Okay.
172.802
match. Okay. All right, and so are we looking for a? And my recollection is that the way that one of these normally starts up is it starts up with some general fund money. Is that correct? to fund it and then it's returned, or?
Chair Butler, this is not factored in here. General fund money is not factored in here.
Right.
No, that is not going to
get started, too.
The fees, currently the program is operating within our office, and we will...
Oh, I see. So the $50 is actually paid to your office right now?
Right now. That's
right. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought it was an informal organization. So you're presently registering the athletic, registered athletic trainers and so forth, then?
Yeah, sure. But we're, without the benefit of a board, yes. It's just a registration program.
Okay. I beg your pardon. I am sorry. I didn't understand that you were already basically operating it out of the office. But you don't do any investigation or anything of that nature?
That's correct.
Let me ask this. In addition to the eight licensing boards that we have there right now, are there any others that are like this that you collect fees for and do services for?
Chair Butler, you mean without the benefit of a board?
Without the benefit of a board?
Yes. Body piercers do not have a board. It's a program.
Anyone else?
No.
Okay. So... if we had somebody here to present body piercing, then that would be a potential additional board as well on the health and licensing board.
Chair Butler, there hasn't been that. We are not aware of any board at this time.
Okay.
So
right.
For body piercing.
Maybe that's an improvement we could make is add the body piercing into this board.
Mr. Chair, I'll decline carrying that bill on the floor. the full-time equivalency requirements that you have here do relative to operating the board. Can you maybe explain that to us, please? What the full-time equivalency would be?
Chair Butler, members of the committee, because we've had some experience with the programs that we currently represent, we actually do a cost factor on the number of FTEs required for boards with this kind of enforcement and examination and licensing issues attached to it. In order for them to pay their share or the additional items that would be required of our staff, we would calculate to a FTE at a salary range 19 and a half-time individual at a salary range 12. So those are what those are factored in at today. Once again, this is based on our current knowledge with nine other programs.
Okay. And you have that calculated in then to the 175.8. As the 175.802 as the total cost, but how do you get started? Are there some funds right now that they've accumulated that you use as your 3 month reserve?
Chair Butler, at present time, I believe their carry forward balance for remembering again that their only registration program is about $1,000 for the next biennium.
Back to the board itself, it meets once a year. Is that my saying? It says the athletic board shall meet at least once a year at a time and place determined by the health division. It's in section 3, part 3, on page 2.
Mr. Chair, if I could point out, that is a minimum amount or number of meetings. That is, particularly in the first biennium, and particularly in the first year, as the board is, or as the program is ramping up, and the rules that are going to need to be promulgated to implement the legislation are put into place, the board's going to need to meet more often.
Let me pick out any one of the other small boards, perhaps. How many times does any of the other small boards do they meet on an annual basis?
Chair Butler, it varies, and I'll give you a couple of examples. Hearing aid dealers is a board that we provide administrative oversight for 3 times a year. Direct entry midwifery, which has had some litigation problems, 5 to 7 times per year. Those are both very...
So 3 to 5 to 7.
Right.
And these are established boards.
These are established boards. Now, for example, we calculated for the benefit of legislative fiscal staff 4 meetings in the first year and 4 meetings in the second year.
Okay. So four meetings are contemplated at this time. And that would be for the rulemaking and then for follow-up on compliance. Any subcommittees anticipated in this process?
Chair Butler, yes, subcommittees are a reality as part of this process, but we've included that in our 8 meetings for the entire biennium.
Okay. Is that provided for in Section 3 or to have the subcommittees?
Chair Butler, for other regulatory bodies, if it is a subcommittee of the board, those are provided for under the Administrative Procedures Act, that the subcommittee of the board can act and come back to the board with recommendations.
And coming back then to the number of registrants, 225 registered annually at a $325 registration, do you feel like, Representative Carmel, do you feel like that's a reasonable, that 325 will come forward and register the first year and then immediately move to renewal? The second year.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that, if it's a requirement, they'll have to, because in order to, if the mandatory registration is a requirement in order for them to practice as an athletic trainer, then yes, they'll come forward to register. I have to admit, and I think I'm working off of old numbers because I just looked down at the date of the numbers that I've got in the 2019, so we may have a little lack of communication between Sue Wilson and myself. I thought that we might be able to slide by with this thing at about 275 a person, but Sue has, and that was on a, that would be anticipating that there wouldn't be as much investigatory work the first year. There would be more board work that needed to be done with regards to the rules and that sort of thing. And then understanding the fixed expenses with Department of Administrative Services and some of the other fixed costs that are involved.
The practical matter, how do you investigate somebody, let's say they set up in Southern Oregon somewhere, how do you... To go through the yellow pages and see if they're registered. How do we find out when they're registered and not registered with the board?
I think, Mr. Chair, probably what would initiate an investigation would be if there was a complaint.
Or that was a complaint.
Yes. So if you had, you went to an athletic trainer over in Ontario and for some reason, you didn't see any certificates or you just didn't think that something was right, maybe you would complain. Maybe you'd call the health licensing office and say, I just went to this guy and I'm not real sure. Can you check for me? And then you find out that he's not registered. Then that would probably launch the health licensing office into at least making a few calls to kind of find out what the situation with the person would be.
Let's go back to the $275 for just a moment. You've got 62 that are willing to pay $50. You're going to have 225 that are going to be willing to pay $325.
Well, I've talked with the athletic trainer leadership, and they indicated that $275, $325, it's pretty steep, and they are concerned about the cost. But that's something that they recognize that may is a cost of the registration, and so they would they'd be ecstatic if I could go back to them and say we got it down to 150 or 200. But
practically, Mary, most of them are registered nationally already, are they not?
They are certified
nationally,
right.
So they can use the certification, the national certification credential behind their name.
That's correct.
Okay.
They can. However,
in the state of Oregon. At this particular point in time, we have a voluntary registration and national certification. If you or somebody, a member of your family, goes to an athletic trainer, or they, or they're in a working in a, or they're in a school, going to school, and a person is calling themselves an athletic trainer, treats them and treats them inappropriately, there basically is no recourse because there's no regulation in the state at this time.
I see. Okay. But you don't feel like that that making it mandatory that there'll be that kind of problem to moving up to $225 a month.
They are going to complain. There's going to be some that will complain about the cost, yes. But they also understand that that is part of, it's interesting because there's basically two or three ways that professions become regulated. One is because, you know, somebody says, gee, it's in the public's interest to regulate them, like body piercers or tattoo artists or whatever. Might have been that way. I don't know, maybe they wanted to regulate themselves. But, you know, somebody says, gee, they ought to be regulated. So there's a law passed. The second way is that for an industry such as what the athletic trainers have done is to come forward and say, look, we recognize that there's some consumer protection issues out there, and we would like to make sure that the consumer is protected, and we want to make sure that there are regulations that say, you know, if you're going to call yourself one of us, and it's good for our profession, so if you're going to call yourself one of us, we want to make sure that you have the background to really be one of us.
How much is the national licensing cost?
The national certification is approximately $125 a year.
So they still pay that on top of the existing?
They might, and then again, they might not. I mean, it's not a requirement.
So it wouldn't be a requirement to continue the national license.
It wouldn't as long as they can pass the exam that the board chooses. And if the board were to choose a national test and then set a higher standard or same standard, you know, whatever standard they set for the passing of that test, it's conceivable that a person could be licensed by the state of Oregon and not certified by the national body, particularly after the first year.
Again, going back and drawing on the information that we have in the other licensing boards, that's always a problem. And a question is that, you know, if there's a national examination that's required, why does Oregon feel like it's got to go to a higher standard? Number two, what kind of reciprocity would we be offering folks that have taken the national examination?
Again, let's see if we refer to the bill. I'm trying to remember where reciprocity is. One moment, Mr. Chair. If you look in section 6, under section 4, of course, it could be done by rule as far as reciprocity is concerned. But also, if you look at section 6, particularly the bottom of page, the top of page 4, line 2, registered or licensed in good standing as an athletic trainer in another state. The read-in line for that, Mr. Chair, for not pointing that out earlier, the read-in line for that would be nothing in sections 1 to 13 of the act is intended to E, prohibit any person from performing athletic training services in the state for purposes of continuing education, completely or training, if services are performed for no more than 60 days in any calendar year and performed in association with a registered athletic trainer, if the person is registered or licensed in good standing. In other words, a person that is licensed in another state can practice here for a short period of time without becoming registered, and as far as reciprocity is concerned, under section 4, the board would be able to set whatever reciprocity standards they felt were going to be necessary, so that athletic trainers coming here from other states that are licensed or certified or registered could.
And in your way of thinking, would Oregon license be different than the national license?
only from the standpoint that it gives people remedy in the state of Oregon if they're mistreated by a person who's calling themselves an advocate.
I hate to say this, but I have to really straight up agree. I think this bill has been heard once in human resources, and I'm uncomfortable. I have some questions.
I know that Senator Lynn has had questions regarding the Department of Administrative Service overcharge for overhead before. Go ahead, Senator Lynn.
And do we have any other state that has regulated of this athletic training operation in other states?
Thank you, Senator, Mr. Chair, Senator Lynn. There are currently 36 states, including, and it ranges everything from a voluntary registration, such as what Oregon currently has, to a full licensure that is administered by the Board of Medical Examiners in South Texas. There's 36 states. The spectrum is between voluntary as Oregon for a full licensing.
I'm talking about a full licensing.
Full licensing. There are, I know that there are about 22 states that have the full licensing. Most states that have, that talk about athletic trainers in their statutes address licensing.
How much do they charge other states, you say, for a full license?
I'm sorry, sir, I don't know. I didn't.
Okay. The second question I have, how much is that massage therapist that the licensing fee? Any idea?
Chair Butler, Senator Lim, I do not know the answer to that question. That is not one of the boards within my purview, but perhaps legislative fiscal staff knows the answer.
Guessing at this point, Senator Lim, I think if I recall, the maximum they can charge is $100, and they're charging $80, if I remember correctly. But I can check on that.
And also, last question.
Yes.
Since it's a regulating, I don't hear from the members. Do they want it, or any opposition, or simply it's a top-down, we are going to let this organization to listen to us, or do we have here from the people out there, they want to see?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Lim. The athletic trainers want to pass this bill. This is something that has been in the works, as I mentioned earlier, for 22 years. What we're interested in is making sure that we have good protection for our kids. And good protection for the public. And I personally have worked on this issue since 1977, and it is one that the association itself is interested in seeing passed.
Okay, so did they come to the House Committee on Human Resources? Did they come and testify if you have this bill?
Yes, they did. They came and they put together about a 30-minute presentation that involved the athletic trainer from Willamette University, an athletic trainer from Klamath Falls came and spoke, two athletic trainers from Portland came and spoke, high school athletic trainers, and one from McMinnville. We had folks from all over that had testified in favor of the legislation.
Yeah. I like the beer. But I'm not comfortable, you know, those people making a small amount of money paying national fees, and this one is amount to be part of it. I think it's excessive.
Let me ask this of Ms. Wilson. It's my understanding that you have a 1.5 full-time equivalent as to the personal services. Is there any way that could be done? I know that you run a very, very efficient department, and I understand that you do have some in there for investigatory costs as well under personal services and contract services. Is there any way that we could this to be run with less than 1.5 FTE?
Chair Butler, members of the committee, that report be your decision. The other boards and programs that operate within the office pay their portion of regulatory licensing and the services provided by our office. So that would be your decision, and boards currently don't augment other boards. So, and this being a new board, obviously we would be back in 2 years reporting their current activity level. So at that time, should they have a carry forward balance of $60,000? Absolutely. We will be reducing their fair amount of fees.
In the deal, that's the page 5, line 4, section 10, health division by rule shall impose fees for the following. If the health division that shall impose the fee, then why it has to go through the way from me? It seems to me in the bill they have authority to do that as long as this bill passes.
You have to authorize your
you have to authorize
expenditures, even though they do it. Mm-hmm.
Sure, my concern is that because of the number of these individuals who will be registered, I'm afraid that if they're going to have a very active board, it's going to need to be staffed, and it's going to need to meet regularly, and my guess is that the fees are going to have to stay pretty stiff. Going to start out stiff and probably stay stiff for a while. Do you think that the members will go along with that?
Well, I think that there's thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Trow. I think that there's a hope by the members that as they once the structure is in place, that as more people move to Oregon and more people become registered as athletic trainers, and that number goes up, that the registration fee will either stay the same or decline over time. And I think that's a very strong possibility, because our once everything is in place, I could see that happening. Sue and I have talked a little bit about that, not great extensively, but we have talked a little bit about that.
What about the demographics of people doing this? Are there considerably new persons doing this every year?
Yes, there are, surprisingly. At the national level, particularly in the last 10 years, we have seen an increase of approximately 100% in the numbers. In other words, about 10 years ago, there were approximately 9,000 certified athletic trainers nationwide. Now there are almost 20,000, approximately 1,100 per year on the national basis become certified as athletic trainers.
Just doing some math here.
Mr. Chair, if I may interrupt.
Please go right ahead.
There was one thing that I was just reminded of. In 1991 and 93, when we were kind of going through this with the voluntary registration, there were approximately 125 athletic trainers in the state that would fall in within that qualification. And now, here we are 6 years later, and there are approximately 225, so we've almost doubled the number of athletic trainers in the state.
I guess the concern about that is that only half of those were willing to come forward and sign up under the $50 voluntary fee, and if you feel comfortable that you could get the number received with it, Representative Crummell.
Let's see. Senator Lund? Senator Lund?
Yeah.
You're not familiar with this procedure, but it's called rolling.
Okay. Well, yeah.
You'll see.
It's voting,
and it's in the room.
Yeah, yeah. We're kind of used to it over here.
Okay. We've had a hearing on a public hearing on House Bill 2704 as they engross relative to the athletic trainers, creating the new provisions for an athletic training division. I just wanted to confirm with Senator Timms. If you have any questions, Senator Timms, I think we've got most of the questions that I have, and we've gone through the fiscal, and there is, this is grassroots driven. It's driven by the approximately 300 plus, I'm sorry, 200 plus, I beg your pardon, 220 to 225 athletic trainers within the state of Oregon, and they feel like that even though $325 might be steep, that they could go ahead and raise that on an annual basis. Is it considered a biannual fee at all?
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to consider a biennial fee. I'm sure that they might be willing to do that also, but if it was, quite frankly, taking $325 and doubling it, I think that would be harder to come up with than the...
I'm going to have a great outcry that the Russian do law. That would be something that could save you money and eventually ensue the debt process. Are there any other comments or questions then at this particular time? If not, we'll move into a work session. Okay, we'll go into a work session on 2704. Up to the 2704 work session.
I've got kind of the same concerns you've alluded to in terms of once this is started, I'm not real confident that you'll get the full 225 people registering, even though it's required, but I could see some might drop out or drop back to volunteer status or various reasons that they might not come for. So I do have concerns to kind of act of faith. I'll go ahead and see how it works for a year and then let you come back and explain next session when if there's a shortfall.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, if I could, I would point out that there is a sunset. Section 17, which is on page 8, is a repeal on December 31st, 2005. So if this were not working out, I think
Senator Hannum shared with us, he said that of all the sunsets I've ever seen, there's only been one office that ever sunset, and that was the Board of Auctioneers in 25 years. Representative Lumber.
I move House Bill 2704 to be passed by the Nation of Co-Ways and Moves Committee.
Then move that 2704, House Bill 2704, be moved to the full Ways and Means, full House, full Joint Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Just a question, will there need to be general fund dollars to put in this report?
Chair Butler, Senator Trow, no.
Wouldn't be a loan or anything of beginning cash balance. The startup supplies, nothing of that nature then.
Okay.
All right, Chair.
I just wanted Representative Leonard to know that I read every one of these bills before I refer it to a committee and very well versed in it. I think this is an excellent bill.
Thank you.
I don't doubt that.
Thank you, Leonard.
Or I wouldn't be here. I get that, too.
Is there anyone opposed to moving this to the full Ways and Means?
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Leonard.
I like it, but I think that we need to consider the people. Even though I thought it's serious, and then as I said, it's 1 year, and then I said $700 plus a national fee $100 and plus is close to $1,000. And I'm not sure what we are doing here. Are we doing for the people or for the board? You know, to me, I just cannot accept.
Thank you, Senator Lynn. Senator Lynn will be a no vote. Any other no votes at this point, then? Recognizing Senator Lynn as a no vote, we'll go ahead and do pass this into 2704, House Bill 2704, to the full Ways and Means. Do pass recommendation. And a carrier for that, Representative Leonard, correct?
Mr. Chair, if I may, just for Senator Lim, let me visit a little bit over the next couple of days with Lou Wilson and see what we can do to see if there's any unforeseen opportunity to drive the cost down. But I think it would be helpful for us to visit about that.
You'll be carrying it on the floor, is that right?
I would love to carry this bill on the floor.
I never even took Ted Orloff, but are you going to represent Ted Orloff on behalf of the...
I can, Mr. Chairman. He is caught in that terrible traffic accident.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Anybody trying to go to Fulton real soon might want to consider an alternative route. It's a gather right now.
It happened
at 11 o'clock this morning.
And just after 3, and then we can reach service over. For Mr. Runoff, he's tied up. Why don't we just go ahead and we'll carry forward all of the business from today's agenda over to tomorrow's agenda. Okay, I'm sorry. We'll go ahead and open the hearing on Senate Bill House Bill 503, and we're scheduled for public hearing and possible work session. So we'll go ahead then and carry over House Bill 503 for public hearing and work session tomorrow. Thank you very much. I just had no idea.